so many years.
I want to apologize.
No, I mean, I haven't been in a group like, yeah, well, I don't mean it to be an apology. I'm grateful, actually. It's fun, it's a fun party, but it's kind of like it was 50 years ago when we were consuming our own product, and there's no real commerce for poetry, but it's a great party that Harold and Slava cooked up, and I'm grateful to meet you guys all and hear you all. Harold, and especially this guy, Mr. Brinish, is I can't, you know, I'm still blown away by what a real poet he is, what a real amazing book his book is. And so Harold, you'd asked me to read the Haymaker. I started reading it the other day. I can't read it, it's 12 pages long. It's about the illusion of boundaries, and it's about everything we talk about, really. It's just a long chant. So I'll give you another little dose of it, and then I'll try to read a few more recent things, because this is pretty old. I think I ended with the brakeman dropping a match in the Robson Valley and before when they burned it out so the railroad could come through. I think that's where I left off, and that was early, and I'm not going to get too far beyond that. So we went out with Martin traps, pitchforks, and rum. We rode up Goat River, Castle Creek, the Beaver, Swift Current, Horse Creek, 10 Mile, Ptarmigan, Buck Creek, Slim Creek, the Big and Little Shuswap, snapping alders, mud oozing to the girth, chasing a moose with twin calves across the river into Black Spruce. We went out to skin the lynx and toss barley at the moon. We were thirsty for the liquor of clay and silt, juice of timothy, brome grass, and clover that swelled around our tractor wheels. We drove our horses, our tractors, our families in circles at the foot of Yuhaihasun, mountain of the spiral road. We went out to set chokers on the great spruce while red squirrels yelled down through the hail of cones. We went out to bulldoze the yellow fog between cottonwood trunks, and then we hacked up the trunks and burned them with diesel and truck tires. When the smoke cleared and the last charred bone was tilled under, we admired the harrowed field that glistened in the purple silence like a great pelt. We cursed and twisted the last roots of bottomland into wire rope, worm gears, and pork chops, until the sun was hung like a new carcass in a cedar snag. We went out in baseball caps and rubber boots, and our watches wound tight until they froze and fell from our wrists. We went out full of coffee with latigo leather cinched around our stomachs, our hearts full of bacon, our knuckles like dog teeth. We went out while the smoke from our cabins rose straight as a spike between the mountains. We went out while the women refilled kettles and stirred the coals, out while they washed mason jars and hung cabbages and cheeses in the cellar, out while they gathered herbs and plucked the chickens. "When will you come back?" they asked. "When do you think you might come back?" the women wondered. We went out to buckle heavy harness on the mountains that smelled sweet as lemon, our lungs big as silos, our faces red as beef. We went out to find more earth we could drain, slough we could graze or plow open. We went out to spit blueberry juice at the storm of mosquitoes. Sometimes the ripe windrows unwound like lovers, sometimes like entrails. We went out to the ruts and the breakdowns and the coughing animals. We went out for the distance, to look back at the peeled logs we had chinked with violence, the walls we had hewn to keep us away from the women. We went out to pump grease into sprockets and kingpin bushings. We went out because it was out, and it was endless. The green day was endless. While salmon crowded to the mouths of clear rivers, we went out, we went up the rivers we had named. We hung them with steel and timber trusses. We put the virgin clay in barges, the new crop in wagons, the milk of Han Shan's cold mountain in stainless tanks. We went out to make hay. We went out without forgiveness. We went out before the raven climbed into his ragged pulpit, out before the owl digested her weasel. We went out to make wood, to split open birch and red cedar. We went out for the taste of heartwood. When are you coming back? The women whispered. Maybe you could guess. I'm going to stop there. That's the first section, between 2 days. I got to try and stay within my time frame here, Harold.
You're good on time.
All right. You're going to have to keep me in time because I don't know where I am or when I am. You know, it's like there's been a lot about water today, and I'm going to try to get back. Here's some prose, a poem about. So you know, if you were here, I started my life on a big lake, a Flathead Lake, when I was a little boy, and I'm going to die on the biggest lake in BC. Atlin Lake, that's where I live most of the time. And if I get there before the lake thaws, because I don't need to be there right now. I need to be there pretty soon. But so this is just a little short poem about walking on the lake before breakup under Atlin Mountain. Walking the shifting ice to nowhere along random fissures that map my roadless days on the frozen lake. Low cloud, a drum skin stretching across wind-polished summits, echoing the boom and crack of a great movement underneath. How thick is the world that supports such quick breathing toward no destination? How long before the dark island shore breaks free and a green wave rises to swallow my shadow? I was telling Art that he was telling me about somebody that's... Oh, we were talking about Merwin and his later poems writing a lot about old age. I'm 84. I'm writing about, you know, what it feels like to be 84. So back to the water. So the water of Atlin Lake, which I spent a hell of a lot of time on, and catching maybe nothing, but catching quite a few fish too, or just catching my own reflection. Simonidae, which the lake trout, of course, is in the salmon family. So this is just an attempt to come to terms with my fishing. Boatman chopping into a dark swelling. With what desire are you making the water restless? Green line taut, pulling under against the unknown depths of glacial darkness, your slow breath touching a light breeze over the great movement of lake, as a dragonfly hangs beside you, holding you in the still, rippling spruce shadow beneath cold mountain faces of stone and ice. Green mirror rocking my boat, green line cutting deeper as dusk begins, glazing the surface, and my mind almost forgets to ask what the invisible might give, might tug and startle my crude motive as the lure travels cold thermal zones and the snake deep in my limbic is coiled to strike. Green line running out through the eyes of the rod and down through a nerve in my arm like a fuse, taut with a primitive patience, chrome spoon with a hook and a few ounces of lead. Until hunger yanks and lights the fuse, I indulge a poetic innocence, deep breathing without metaphor, the dark underneath floating such privilege. My dream pulse snaps when it bites, big trout jerking the nerve, winding for my old brain as I reel against the invisible lake sole, tugging the rod and mountains, bending with the yank and dive, torque of trout muscle against my will, until the pull weakens and a twisting light rises from the clearest darkness, writhing beneath my boat and my black net. After I kill and gut another gift of glacial blood, sleek, moon-dappled green and blue body with a rose blush of twilight in its belly, a loose hook snags and stings my throat. How can I compose a prayer or song of gratitude or deny my predator? never having known hunger. How are we doing for time?
There's lots of time.
Okay. I don't very often write about dreams, almost never, but I remember you said this morning you had a dream. I don't ever write a dream, but we all have recurrent dreams, don't we? We all have, and I'm going to write you a little short poem of my recurrent dream, which involves my kids, and it's exactly what I'm going to tell you here. This was on Thanksgiving morning a year ago at 3 a.m. I wake up grateful for the film crew hunkered in a bunker beneath the bald hill above my shoulders, working freely and fearlessly on Technicolor reruns of all the action episodes I shared with loved ones, most prominently my daughters and the horses, as we explored the Wild West and its abandoned homesteads where others had left their dreams for us to revise and hammer up in the Clear Mountain headwaters. And that's exactly what my recurrent dream is. So I've got a couple little recent ones, that one of which I shared with you, I think. But here's old age talking some more. September scratch. The woods smell of wild cranberry, resin, and decay. Roots contracting beneath the hush of willow and fireweed. Through a web of bare aspen limbs, blue peaks are smoldering and rolling heavy cloud down into the lake, where a man with a pole and a pen inhales his anonymity. The fish have gone deep, the man's lines dissolve with his slow breathing. Yesterday he met a grizzly, and with less than a haiku greeting, each turned back into the shining densities of fall. Enough trout smoke, enough stanzas scratched into the goatskin drum with friends. More than enough refrains left rinsing with stones on the lake shore. One more. Woodtooth journal note. It's about trees, about beavers, you'll see. As it sucks nectars up from blue silt's decay in mycelia, shattering sunlight with its crazy waving arms, old cottonwoods pump the air I breathe with honey, resinous perfume, declaring unequivocally that my pauper's life beside the beaver lodge is pungently adrift beyond the quarrels and cacophony I left behind. Living with the beaver who craves and survives on the sweetness of alder and cottonwood's slippery flesh, and the slippery flesh and creamy bones, I have abandoned the primacy of hardwoods, whose lignum vitae I've carved and caressed with vengeance and awe, discovering now that even an exclusively softwood diet brings forth an occasional satori. As for a fecund bed for exhausted bones, what more could an old woodsman ask than a rippled hummocky backwater tended by chisel-toothed carvers and visited by the operatic loon whose throat so stridently erases all doubts about loneliness and death. Thank you, guys. Thank you.